What is up, sports fans? Welcome back to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm your host, King Kaz. I'm joined by my good friend and co-host extraordinaire, the one, the great JVZ.
Thank you. It's a special Monday edition. We had to get this one in.
We had a crazy weekend of sports that we're going to talk about in our roundup coming up. And it's just been kind of a really, 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 really barn burner of just interesting stuff. So to start, Stanley Cup Finals is over. The hockey season has come to an end, and your winners are the St. Louis Blues, who win the cup in 7 games. Now, I don't think either one of us really got a chance to watch much of these games. I checked out a bunch of the highlights. There were some very interesting calls in these last couple of games.
Throughout the playoffs in general, there were a lot of interesting calls. And I think this is kind of a playoff season that is going to result in a lot of changes for how replay gets handled by the league and their central replay system. So, yeah, a lot of interesting stuff.
Speaking of this St. Louis winning, and you can go to my Twitter and check this out, twitter.com/KingKaz. This has been one of those things where I've seen so many people excited for this because the St. Louis Blues have not won in a long time. And this is, I think I said on Twitter, basically, this is why you pick a team and stick with them for the journey. The lowest of lows and then the highest of highs is really what this has brought to people, and I love it.
I know not everybody in this crew agrees with that, but most notably, our Lions Free producer DJM, I think there are definitely exceptions to that rule because sometimes it's like you want to have an identity with the team, but sometimes the people that run the team don't deserve that. So
that, I think that falls under a different thing, but I think in the case where like you just kind of have that homebred team for you, that you've just been through the ups and downs with, when something like this occurs, it's a really, really great experience.
Yeah.
All right. So let's really quick move into the other things here in our roundup. We have the Raptors beating the Warriors in 6 games. There is obviously a lot to unpack there. We are going to talk about that at length, or at the length that DJM gives us, a little bit later. This is really interesting. I haven't fully checked into this, so maybe you can give me a little bit more insight to this. So Cleveland hires the first female coach recruited out of college. What is up with that?
Well, I mean, because a lot of the big name female assistants that have been hired in the NBA so far have been, WNBA players, people that worked in the G League. This is kind of the first time where they went out, they basically hired Lindsay Gottlieb, the head coach for the University of California basketball team. Mm-hmm. They went to the college system, pulled somebody out of there, and basically this is the first time they are using college basketball as a recruitment arm for head coaches, at least the female side of college basketball. So that's why I think this is important. It's not just former players. This basically opens up a whole new avenue. Because women's basketball has on the NCAA side, there's been plenty of good coaches there, plenty of good female coaches there. Like, Pat Summitt is probably the name that pops into everybody's mind. So yeah. you kind of ask the question, like, why aren't coaches like that getting opportunities in the NBA? So now we're at the point where they are, and mm-hmm. or at least one has. So hopefully that kind of opens the floodgates that like there's a whole talent pool here.
In sports or other kind of things, once you do one, and then depending on the success or failure, which sometimes shouldn't be like atoned to that one person.
Right. That gate shouldn't be there.
Yeah. That can usually, you know, do whatever. But I think just in the overview of everything, right? No matter what, as long as she brings value in either being really good at the assignments that they give her or whatever, like I kind of basically want to say none of that matters. This should just be a stepping stone. But I do think in a certain light, she does still have to do like a good job, but her track record shows that she can do a good job. So I think that speaks leaps and bounds.
Yeah. 7 NCAA tournaments in her 8 seasons at Cal, including 2013 Final Four. So yeah, pretty good record there. It's kind of, you know, like if you can coach women, you can coach men. It's still just basketball.
Yeah.
And,
I mean,
even if the games are a little bit different, like I think this is kind of an acknowledgement of that fact that, you know, there's a whole side there that we have not bothered recruiting from yet. So this is the first one, hopefully the first of many.
All right. So going on from there, talking about more women's sports, we got the Women's World Cup going on right now. A couple of pretty good notable games happened already. I kind of checked out a little bit of France and South Korea. France, I don't know what it is, right? And maybe South Korea just wasn't the opponent to go look at, but I'm getting fearful that France across the board in men's and women's soccer is just amazing.
Yeah. And they are the host nation, so I think they get a bit of a boost from that. But yeah, I mean, they are definitely a very powerful team, definitely one of the teams to beat in this tournament. The USA kind of made their own mark, especially in the first match where they beat Thailand 13-0. There was a little bit of controversy there because of some of their celebrations. I think there's less controversy about running up the score because I think in soccer that's kind of generally more accepted, that you kind of just keep playing, and in a way it's almost kind of disrespectful if you really tone it down to avoid running up the score. But yeah, 13 goals is a lot in pretty much any game. But I think a lot of that was kind of just down to Thailand, and I've never seen a team put so many people in their own penalty box and not actually be able to defend anybody before. This isn't Thailand. I'm a little harder on them because this isn't their first go around. So this isn't they made the tournament last time. They even scored last time. So like this is not their first go around. I feel like they should have been better prepared. I think this USA team just kind of came out firing and then kept firing. And
I mean, amazingly, right? Just to kind of put things into a perspective, the USA is sitting at a 16 goals in total in their group that they've played so far.
Yeah,
a bunch of those obviously came against Thailand, and then they scored, I think, 3 or 4 on Chile.
Yeah.
But with that being said, I think they have a relatively easy group. I don't think they have good significant challengers. Maybe Sweden will have an interesting look towards them. But for USA and Sweden, the Chile Thailand was kind of an easy get. Canada's done really well, as has France, as we've said, and so has Germany, surprisingly enough, done really well. I have no insight on the German teams at all, men's or women's side. But because this is Sports Odds and Ends and we like to make silly prop bets, I'm going to go around the horn. I think as big as that goal differential is, sitting at 16, with them pretty much being a lock to get into the next round. I'm not going to pick USA. I'm kind of excited to see what France is going to continue to do. I think they had an interesting group, and they won all three games to get to the next stage. So I think, and then I just think France right now is really good at soccer. So I think I'm going to pick France to be my team to make it all the way in this.
I still have to pick the US. Because one of us in this group has to play the American role. So, but yeah, I've
just been impressed by French soccer this last like 2 years. You know what I mean? Like the French mindset to soccer is astounding. There's a lot of good ball play between teammates, and there's so much setup and execution that happens that I am very impressed with what France has done across the board.
I think the U.S. team has a lot of young players that are kind of getting their first chance at playing in a World Cup. I think they've done, you know, they do have still a lot of veteran players, but it almost feels like there's kind of not a whole lot of in between. There's half, half veterans, half newbies. And I feel like the newbies are just really young, really hungry. Even though it's kind of been the veterans that have carried them. But I feel like when you have that weird mix like that, that's kind of a situation for a team to go out firing because they want to prove themselves.
And, oddly enough,
not just the youngsters wanting to prove themselves, but the veterans wanting to prove that they can still hold their own with all these young upstarts.
Like, oddly enough, you say that. And I think, legitimately, that's the team we wanted from the U.S. men's soccer team, was a good mixture of strong veterans with a lot of young talent that we do possess but did not utilize. So I'm really glad it's being utilized here on the U.S. I obviously... overall, I'm going to cheer for the U.S., but I'm just impressed by French soccer right now.
All right, one other thing that I'm impressed by are the Padres and the Rockies, who somehow managed to score 92 runs in a four-game series at Coors Field.
Yeah.
So, Coors Field is historically a field where a lot of scoring, just because the altitude, and I believe the fences are pretty short as well, so there's basically a lot of home runs. It's just one of those fields, and kind of a nightmare for pitchers, but just a boon for hitters. And this is basically another example of one of those situations. 92 runs again.
Yeah, that's astounding.
I believe this is a record for a four-game series. It's like basically we have guys that are hitting 15 for 24, like ridiculous averages over the course of the series. A ton of stat padding. If you like defense, it was a mess. If you tried to go out there and do nine pitchers, nine innings, you're not going to do so well. Like the pitchers basically got shelled, except for one pitcher, Luis Perdomo, who basically tossed 5 1/3 innings and did not give up a single run. So he's the only person to leave that unscathed. While everybody else had an ERA of 10.78. So,
that's a rough day. Well, that's a rough few days.
Yeah, this is all pitchers on both teams. So, the Coors Field strikes again.
No, I mean, no matter what, right? Like, as bad as this is for those pitchers, this is just an awesome, like, an awesome thing of history, you know.
And especially if you're at the park and you're one of those people that likes to go and hopefully catch a ball Yeah, this was your chance.
All right, that's been the rundown. So let's just pull the Band-Aid off and get right to it. The NBA Finals. The Raptors are your 2019 NBA champions. We mentioned that they won in six games after winning three on the road against the Golden State Warriors. A lot to unpack here. Obviously, winning three on the road is tough, especially in the finals, and especially against a team as well constructed as the Golden State Warriors are.
Yeah.
But weirdly enough, and we kind of talked about how other teams, especially the Houston Rockets, were a team that was designed to deal with the Golden State Warriors specifically, and they came up short in that. But oddly enough, the moves late in the season for the Raptors to get Kawhi Leonard and the other people that they got and put this roster together really, really showed up, because it was a really well played, just series of basketball by the Raptors, and a lot of people, have been kind of put on high. You know, there's a lot of guys who are getting looked at on that Raptors roster now by a lot of different teams.
They made their
mark. Not just Kawhi Leonard. Yeah.
It was basically a tremendous gamble by Masai Ujiri in the offseason to, you know, it's they didn't just trade any player to get Kawhi Leonard. They traded their franchise cornerstone. You get the greatest player in the history of your franchise, DeMar DeRozan. They took him. They traded him. He had, you know, he was best friends with Kyle Lowry, the point guard. And, you know, like, not only are you trading a very popular player, you're breaking up an incredible friendship.
And possibly hurting your team chemistry.
Yeah. And, bringing in a guy who hadn't played for a full season, pretty much, where nobody really knew quite what was going on with his injury. The other thing is you basically get 1 year with Kawhi Leonard and don't know whether he's going to stay. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how your team is going to treat this person that they know might only be here for a year. It's a tremendous gamble to make. And holy shit, did it pay off? Like, that, you know, Leonard had a fantastic season, and in true Kawhi Leonard form, his playoffs were even better than his regular season. That's a rare thing. Like, we've talked about that in the past. 538's done some analysis that, like, playoff LeBron is it's a thing. It's a concept because everybody drops off during the playoffs. LeBron only drops off a little bit. That's why it seems like he's upping his game during the playoffs. Kawhi Leonard actually does up his game in the playoffs, which is, you know, like, you're going up against better competition. You're going up against shortened rotations, better players, just on average. You're basically playing hurt a lot of the time too. So, Kawhi's kind of this robotic guy. So it's like he's getting a software update in the off season, or sorry, not it, when you get to the postseason, it's like he's getting the software update. I think like only Hakeem Olajuwon has, at least among, like, sometimes you get like scrub role players that are great during the regular season, and then during the postseason they're amazing. But as far as like superstar players, it's basically LeBron, Jordan, Hakeem Olajuwon, and Kawhi Leonard that up their game to that level in the playoffs. Yeah. And he basically carried this Raptors team. I don't want to say it was all him, because, you know, guys like Kyle Lowry used to be Like, they used to be criticized for their playoff performance, and Kyle Lowry really stepped up big during the playoffs. Guys like Fred VanVleet, who, like, nobody knows who these guys are, but, you know, they step up big. Pascal Siakam is probably going to win most improved player, or he's at least in contention for that. He stepped up big during the playoffs. Marc Gasol, who, like you alluded to before, they traded for him late in the season at the trade deadline. And, you know, so they made an upgrade there. And so it kind of took until the middle of the playoffs for this team to gel together. But once they did, they actually showed like what a quality team they are. And like we could talk about the Warriors' injuries. But
yeah, I mean, I think we should, right? It is significant to talk about some of these Warriors' injuries. I mean,
ignore Jeremy Lin's veteran presence. Even though he didn't play very much, you know, we love Jeremy Lin here at Sports Odds and Ends, and so
yeah,
we're happy that he's got a championship. And we're happy for Patrick McCaw, who has won 3 championships in 3 seasons. It didn't look great for him when he forced his way off the Warriors team this year. That sounded like a really dumb move, but he somehow found his way onto the Raptors and won another championship. So dude's batting 100% right now.
That's what you're always striving for. But no, let's dig into the Warrior injuries a little bit. So Kevin Durant, a big piece of that Warriors roster, ended up being out for the latter half of the playoffs. He had
a calf injury that he hurt in the second round against Houston. Mm-hmm. And that's part of why, you know, we alluded to this before. That's part of why that Houston collapse was so disappointing, that like, you are not going to get a better opportunity than this. Your team is specifically constructed to beat the Warriors, and the Warriors just lost one of their best players, and they're clearly suffering without him. Like, all the jokes we made about, like, oh, is this team actually better? Like, yeah, they're faster, but they don't have the same level of quality players. They don't have, you know, like when Steph Curry is struggling or Klay Thompson is struggling, they can't fall back on having Kevin Durant to shoulder that load. And so, like, they clearly struggled with that in the Western Conference Finals against the Blazers, but they were still, you know, a better team than the Blazers, who had their own injury issues. Once you get to the finals, you know, if they were up against another team of the quality of the Blazers, or maybe another team of the quality of the Rockets, then maybe mm-hmm. they'd be able to pull it out. But they weren't. This Raptors team was an incredibly put together team, solid from top to bottom, from their leader to all the way down to their role players. It's not a very young team either, even though it seems like there's a couple guys that are kind of making their name now. But I don't think anybody on this team is younger than 26, which is kind of unusual. But it's basically a lot of veteran guys that have, you know, failed a lot in the playoffs. You know, a lot of these guys just ran up to, you know, just got mowed over by LeBron when he was in the Eastern Conference. Kawhi Leonard made the exception, because, you know, he had plenty of success when he was in San Antonio. So you add a guy like him to the mix, and then all of a sudden this Raptors team is a stacked team. It's a powerful team. It's probably not good enough to beat the Warriors when they have all 5 of their all-stars healthy, but that's why we play the games. And taking Kevin Durant out of the mix made it situation where I think the Raptors were pretty clearly the better team, I think. When you take Kevin Durant out of the equation. And it probably, like, aside from a couple mental collapses in the 2 games that the Warriors did win, I think this they basically showed that they were a team that could not only hang with the remaining Warriors, but could yeah. really, you know, could push them around, really. And I think that's what kind of surprised everybody. It's, you know, game one without Kevin Durant, and all of a sudden the Raptors come out and just destroy the Warriors. And it's like, oh shit, like this team is for reals. Let's see how the Warriors respond. And then the Warriors, you know, take an amazing third quarter and manage to win game two. But then the next two games in Toronto were basically solid Raptors wins. And, you know, which is why Kevin Durant was desperate to come back. And so I think there's a lot of hindsight there regarding Kevin Durant's injuries that, you know, was he ready to actually play in game five? And who knows? Like, basically all the doctors decided that, you know, he was ready. He decided he was ready. And he played a great game during the time that he was in there, but then unfortunately he tore his Achilles. And you know, and that's an injury that changes the landscape of the entire league for the next season, because
he's going to be out on recovery for pretty much the
they already announced what is he's determined. Not playing at all next season.
Yeah,
he's a free agent, and so whether it was going to be with the Warriors or some other team, he was going to, you know, like we expected a league with Kevin Durant, with one of, you know, he's a top five player in the league, and so the league is, you know, like just not having that talent in the league is a huge blow to the league, to the Warriors. Like we've already discussed, like how much he means to the team, so. Losing him is a big deal there. It takes the Warriors down from being an unstoppable team to being a beatable contender. And so that's just Kevin Durant. But they also lost Klay Thompson in game six, in the sixth and final game, to a torn ACL. And so he's going to be out for pretty much all of next season as well. Both these guys are free agents. The Warriors are planning on offering both of them max contracts anyways. The interesting thing about the way the Warriors are constructed is
guys.
Yep.
It's hot take time. Cass, does the band stay together in Golden State? Yes or no?
I already thought moves should start. I don't think they should stay together. I already think they should have been moving pieces. I think you try to keep to a core 3-4 of the people that you have. I think DeMarcus Cousins has added a lot to that team. I think obviously I think obviously Durant for me has kind of been the piece that it seems like the most obvious move, but I don't know what you get for him in return just yet.
I mean, you don't get it. He's a free agent, so
yeah. But I mean, if you had the opportunity to get something for him, I wouldn't have known what else you would have gotten.
Easy. Does the band stay together in Golden State?
So interestingly enough, Kevin Durant has a player option. So if he wants to, he can choose to make, I don't know, what is it, like $35 million to just rehab with the Warriors. It seems like all signs are that like teams are not letting this Achilles injury warn them away from offering him a max contract, so he can get a longer term contract.
Will we see the Hamptons Five at full strength in 2021?
In 2021, I don't think so. First of all, I don't think DeMarcus Cousins is coming back, unless he's feeling incredibly spiteful.
which he can do. That would be very on brand for him.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see him sign with the Lakers or some other contender. I do believe that, like, my only uncertainty is whether Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson are going to choose to stay. I absolutely believe the Warriors are going to offer both of them max contracts, regardless of whether they can play or not, regardless of whether they think this is a long-term good idea from a basketball perspective. I think these guys are going to get the thank you contracts. It doesn't matter if these contracts cripple this franchise for the next 5 years, because you balled out and you served this franchise for the last 5 years, and they brought in 3 championships in 5 seasons, and were so incredibly close to, maybe not that close this year, but you know, the year that LeBron won, they were pretty close to winning that one too. So
no matter what, getting there, right, getting to the finals is always a big thing. And they've done it consistently over the last 4 or 5 years. And they're going to look to continue that kind of dominance no matter what. So, yeah, I definitely can foresee them giving Kevin Durant, at least Kevin Durant, why don't you just sit this one out, you know, and rest up, because that's how much we love you contract.
All of the talk about this being the end of the Warriors dynasty is premature. That's definitely what I will say about it. I don't know whether it's going to look exactly the same, but I do think this is like maybe they take a year off. And I don't even think it's that much of a year off. Like I've seen some people say that this team might not make the playoffs next year. Circle to even see that. Like, you still have Steph Curry, you still have Draymond Green, and I think that alone, the problem with that is, like, you know, when you assemble such a strong starting lineup, and then you've got to, you know, pay all those guys max money, the bench that you assemble isn't very good. but I think they still have enough veteran presence on the bench, enough quality. I think they're still going to be a strong team. They're still going to be a playoff contender, whether or not they are a championship contender. I don't think the dynasty is over. I think we'll see a resurgence of the dynasty in 2021.
So, real quick, because I want to get the table's insight on this incident before we start talking about the Lakers, because, you know, LeBron gets airtime. One of the Warriors' minority owners was fined for pushing one of the Toronto Raptors players, Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
Two things.
All right.
Are we happy with the NBA's involvement? And what do you think are the full repercussions of this incident going forward?
Well, I mean, we have had a lot of fan player incidents, none of which have turned violent at this point. This is, you know, the only other incident that involved even touching of a person on the court was Drake walking up to Nick Nurse and giving him of the game, which was an entirely weird situation, but, you know, it crossed the line. I don't care, like, how important of a person you are, you can't walk up there and touch anybody. In this situation, it was Kyle Lowry, you know, flying into the front row to go chase after a ball, but he didn't hit Mark Stevens. He bowled over somebody else. Mark Stevens was sitting next to them and pushed him, and, you know, he basically went out of his way to push him. Like, it wasn't like he was pushing him off himself. He leaned over and pushed him. And then, you know, and on top of that, he was also saying a lot of derogatory things while he was doing that. So, I think this is an adequate punishment. He wasn't just fined $500,000. He was suspended from team activities for a year. This was not just handed down by the NBA, but the Warriors themselves took preemptive action. They took him out of the game when this occurred. This is an embarrassing thing for the Warriors organization. One of your minority owners, who should absolutely know better than to do something like this, gets involved in this sort of way, in the way that you would expect a drunk ass fan to do. I think the players wanted blood from this, and they didn't quite get it. They got a 1-year suspension, but I would be surprised if the Warriors don't find some way to. We've talked about how hard it is to get rid of an owner or an investor. But if the Warriors can find some way to do this, I think they would do that.
Yeah, I think in this situation, unlike others we've talked about, this creates a bad look for the NBA when something like that happens, right? If that was just a fan, right? Because we keep saying fan incident. If that was just a fan, right? Like, that person is arrested, kicked out of the arena, never welcomed back, isn't allowed to ever buy a ticket again. But because this person is an owner, you have to kind of treat it with some kind of letter of the law, right? So that's where the fine comes in. That's where the suspension comes in. And then
to make it very clear that he's not getting special treatment because he's an owner.
Right. But then I think...
just to make it clear, he's not the owner of the Warriors.
No. He owns a small percentage of it. Yeah. But it is an elevation past just a rich fan like a Drake or something like that, right? Who, even in that, right, like, people kind of give him a pass for being well known and famous, but like you said, he has even taken that and crossed the line. So I think in a situation like this, I think going about, there will be more repercussions to come. What they will be, I don't know. But they will definitely, if the players feel like this isn't enough, especially Kyle Lowry, if they feel like this isn't enough, things will happen. Because the NBA reacted really fast, which is unusual. as did the Golden State Warriors. So definitely a very interesting situation. Definitely something I want to see where the tail of this goes. But I stand in the same camp. I think the fine is justly deserved, and if he had more money, you should fine him some more. And I think the suspension is adequate because he is, like, at this point, literally not welcomed back, you know, in the arena for a year.
Yeah, it's not just games. He's suspended from all team activities. Going... not just like 365 days, but going to the end of next season. Yeah. So
it's a very thank you for your money. You can go. Yeah. So that's definitely, I'm for once, I am in praise of the NBA. It doesn't happen often, and it probably will never happen again.
We're about 50-50 on them. It's the NFL that we don't, that we're, that has a little bit of trouble with us. But the NBA, I think they, you know, when it comes to protecting their players, I think they in general, I think they do a good job. Maybe they're not so great when it comes to injuries and whether overusing some of their players. But when it comes to situations like this where they have to stick up for their players, they generally end up doing that. And I think that's different from a lot of leagues. Moving on to DJM calls the next best thing to the NBA season, the NBA offseason.
So we have some Lakers news. LeBron is finally getting the pieces that he wants to construct his Death Star. Yeah.
We had 2 days to celebrate the Raptors. And that's all they did. They gave us two days.
Would you say the Lakers organization paid a king's ransom for this trade?
It did pay king's ransom, and ransom is a
can't see me shaking my head, but I'm shaking my head.
A ransom is a good way to describe this, because they were basically outbidding. They're basically bidding against themselves in a way, because Anthony Davis made it very clear, and we've talked about this at length in the past. He made it very clear that he wanted to go play in LA. So, made it very clear that he wanted to play with the Lakers and go play with LeBron. And this is, the Pelicans used that against them. They were messing with them during the regular season. But now that it comes time to actually negotiate in good faith, it's basically still the Lakers and then everybody else. If they think they're bidding for Anthony Davis, they're basically going for a Kawhi Leonard situation where he plays there for 1 year.
Let's break this down. Let's kind of break this down a little bit for everyone at home. So the Lakers at this point have Anthony Davis. What they then gave up is Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, which I'm going to stop there for a second before we get into the rest of what the Pelicans got. I think as much as I think a lot of drama comes around Lonzo Ball and these other two kind of young talents that the Lakers kind of worked up to get, to give them up for these pieces of LeBron's Death Star, which is literally they gave up a lot for one piece of LeBron's Death Star that he wants to get this.
Yeah.
I already don't know with just the three names that I mentioned, right? I already don't know if I am appreciative of the work that has been done so far. You're losing out on a lot of young talent for a right now factor that might not work out.
The right now factor, like you still have to keep in mind, Anthony Davis is still pretty young.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, you've got LeBron, you have him for 3 more years, at least contract wise, that's what you have. Who knows what he's going to do after that, but you have him for 3 more years. That's your window. So, you kind of have to, they're basically forced to jump in now, because the weird thing is that Anthony Davis having 1 year left on his contract and being dead set on going to LA basically means they could have just waited a year and then gotten Anthony Davis in free agency for free.
Yeah.
But they wanted him 1 year earlier and they didn't want to risk him going to some other team and then actually liking it there and deciding not to come. They didn't want to, and I think more importantly, they wanted one extra year of him during this 3 year window that they have left. They wasted the first year of this 4 year contract. Now they've got 3 more. Do you get Anthony Davis halfway through or 1 year earlier than that? And so this is the price they paid to get him 1 year earlier than that.
All right. So let's talk about some of the other things.
Yes.
2019 number 4 pick.
That was the one they got in the lottery.
in the Pelicans' case, right, you have the number one and the number four pick.
And that number one pick is the most coveted number one pick in since LeBron James, basically.
Yeah. You get a top eight protected first round pick in 2021.
2021 will be the 2022 offseason is the end of LeBron's contract, basically.
Okay.
So I basically why that matters is, you know, your draft position is, you know, aside from the lottery for the bottom 14 picks, the rest of it is decided by record. So if the Lakers are good, those picks are not going to be very good. So that 2021 first round pick probably will end up being a late first round pick, assuming this Lakers team is good now that they have both LeBron James and Anthony Davis. If for some reason they fail to make the playoffs, they end up in the lottery, and that pick ends up being a top eight pick, then the Lakers get to keep it in 2021. But then the 2022 pick becomes the pick that they convey to the Pelicans, and that is unprotected.
Okay. They also get, like, we're not done, folks. Just, I want you to understand, we're not done. They also get pick swap rights in 2023, another unprotected first round pick. An unprotected first round pick in 2024.
Pick swap is something that conveys if the, basically the Pelicans have the right to swap their pick with the Lakers. So they would only do that if the Lakers end up picking higher or earlier than the Pelicans. But that's just kind of it's just an added wrinkle to this. It's basically, instead of giving the first round pick over, it's you're trading your first round picks.
So, yeah, so I take it back to my first statement when I said the Lakers have given up their future for LeBron's right now Death Star that he is trying to accumulate. You also have it noted down here, and I think this is very interesting. LeBron will be roughly around 40 years old by the time that last pick conveys. LeBron's contract.
But yeah, that this contract ends in the 2022 season. So this pick that might get conveyed in 2023, or the swap that might happen in 2023, and then the pick in 2024, like both unprotected. But these are happening when LeBron might not even be on the team anymore. So
yeah. I think one day we may need to, like,
all right, guys,
have an episode where we explain.
Since we're talking about the right now.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about the right now, guys, hot take time. The rumors, of course, have begun. Yes or no, do the Lakers get a third piece? And who do they get, JVZ?
Yeah, so they are...
look at this Lakers roster at the moment.
They do seem to have enough cap room to sign another max player. Things are kind of weird with the timing of this trade and that. Whether they do or don't have a max room might be dependent on when this trade actually happens. This is just an agreement for now. That's been, if anybody backs out of this, this is going to be a huge controversy. But for now, it's just an agreement. It's supposed to happen at a certain time.
Come on, JVZ, say something controversial. Stick your neck out. Who's it going to be? Now, are they going to get a third piece?
Kemba Walker is the the name that everybody's throwing around. I think that's not going to happen. I think he's going to want to stay in Charlotte, where he's loved, and not get mixed up in this clusterfuck. I think the name that gets the player that gets signed by the Lakers, the point guard that gets signed by the Lakers, will be Kyrie Irving, and it will end up being a big old thing because it's Kyrie Irving returning.
And Rajon Rondo?
I mean, he's... Man,
can you imagine the conversations those two would be having with one another? Like, not even about basketball.
You're talking about Rondo and Irving, or
Rondo and Kyrie? Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Rondo's one of those people that he might actually be the smartest person in the room, but he has no tolerance for everybody else not being as intelligent as he is. And I've seen that happen. Let me throw a name out there at you.
Let's get nuts. Let me throw a name out there for you. A name that was bandied about in trade talks this season and is more than likely going to be on the trade block this offseason, JVZ. Mike Conley. What do you think?
See, I feel like that would be a smart signing. I guess it would have to be a trade acquisition. I think that would be a guy that I would want to go after. But that's just because sometimes I don't want to deal with the headaches of bringing in a guy like Kyrie Irving.
I'm going to give JVZ a second here, right? Because looking at this Lakers roster, right? Right now, you have Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Kyle Kuzma, JaVale McGee, Rondo, Lance Stevenson out there, and Tyson Chandler, right? Of names that we know.
I think a lot of those guys were on one-year contracts this past season, so I'm assuming a lot of them aren't going to be around. JaVale McGee might have a longer-term contract, but Kuzma's going to be there. They definitely specifically wanted to keep Kyle Kuzma. The rest of them, like Lance Stevenson, I think those guys were on one-year contracts, so I don't expect them to be around for...
We'll see what happens, but if we're talking about what's there right now, right, that those are the names of note. JaVale McGee, Tyson Chandler are up there in age, so I don't know how much trade stock they have. You could probably have some trade stock in Lance Stevenson and Kyle Kuzma, but like you said, Kyle Kuzma is probably a lock for this team. He's probably a guard on LeBron's Death Star, if anything. Lance Stevenson is a guy who I thought has a good basketball game and a good basketball IQ, but it's just never gotten a chance to really, really, really show out. I still think Tyson Chandler is kind of garbage, but that's me.
NBA champion Tyson Chandler that you were talking about.
Yeah. Look, that's why I have a podcast where I get to say these things. Okay. I think they definitely need more pieces, but I think the thing is, I think Tyson Chandler is somebody you can kind of get rid of at this point if you decide to re-up on JaVale McGee and then, you know, double down on what you're going to do with Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis can play center as well as power forward. You're probably going to have him out there at the forward more often than not, but he could play center. Then you can go, if you drop Tyson Chandler, you can go after another big guy. As you said, Boogie's out there. Yeah, that could be an interesting pickup if, like you said, you let go of Tyson Chandler. I think you keep JaVale McGee, 100%. I think you lock JaVale McGee in because at best, he comes off the bench and is a good defensive player. Not going to do much for you, I think, offensively. I haven't seen JaVale McGee play in a while, so I don't really know how he looks.
But you got to remember, like, the young players on the team, the guys they basically gave up in this trade, besides Kyle Kuzma, those were the guys that did hold up their end of the bargain this year. It was the rest of the guys, all the veterans, that sucked ass.
Yeah.
So
then you're going to come across...
I think you just let all those guys go. Because so this is who's left on the team right now, who still has a contract. LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Mo Wagner, Kyle Kuzma, Isaac Bonga, and Jermario Jones. I don't know who the last two guys are. the rest of that is about $30 million in cap space, and And then, you know, yeah, now they got to go out and, you know, if they max whoever the third person is, then you have not very much money to go after everybody else. You're basically trying to convince people that you are going to win a championship this on this team. So come play for us for a minimum contract. If you are chasing a ring right now, if you are about to retire, Vince Carter, like, come play for us. And hopefully these three guys can carry you to a ring, because you have to remember the Warriors are not going to be the Warriors next year. It's kind of open season now, which is why those two injuries are so goddamn important, because this basically opens up the door for anybody to, like, if anybody builds a team with three good players, there's a very good chance. And that's why the Lakers right now are the Vegas favorites for winning the title in 2020. They got their two superstars, and now they just need to add one more, and they're going to be a tough team to beat. And in a conference where the Warriors are no longer the dominant team, this might be enough to do it. I honestly don't think LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and one other superstar. I don't know if it's enough to beat the Raptors if the Raptors manage to keep Kawhi Leonard. I think that highly of this Raptors team.
I definitely forget Vegas and what DJM said about them. I definitely put the Raptors right now in a really high bar.
Well, I mean, their odds are just because everybody's expecting them to lose Kawhi Leonard. So maybe not expecting, but it's up in the air. So as far as like what you want to bet on right now, that's just a tough decision to make until more of this plays out. But for right now, they are the favorites, or the Lakers are. So that's how much the landscape of the NBA has changed over the last 5 days or so. Like, that's what we thought was gonna take place the next couple of years. It's all up in the air. And the NBA draft is happening on Thursday. It's Monday right now.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited. I happen to catch a little bit of the combine for the draft, which I more and more, as I watch more and more combines, I find them to be more and more useless for figuring anything out. And they're literally at this point to me, nothing but a dog and pony show. That's fun. All right, let's get out of here on these two fun little stories. This one's not so fun, but, you know, it is what it is. A soccer app spied on fans to catch bars hosting pirate streams.
Yeah. So the Spanish Primera Liga, or AKA La Liga, basically has their own app. And apparently that app, like, if you accepted all permissions when you installed this app, you gave this app permission to use your microphone. And if you did that and then you went to a bar and the app was able to detect that you were at this location that is a known bar, and they would use the microphone to pick up the audio surrounding you to tell, like, whether you are listening to the game or whether there's audio of the game being picked up by the microphone. And if they determined that, they would compare like the bar location, what they know about the bar, and see whether that bar has a license to broadcast that game or not. And if they didn't, then they would go out and find the bar, basically. So, yeah. Totally illegal.
The app was downloaded by over 10 million, it says over 10 million times, but that's a lot of people walking around with basically spyware on their phones, listening to their locations, probably using some kind of GPS tracking as well, which just is just bad.
It is, but a part of me applauds them for that level of innovation to come up with a system like that. I think if this wasn't illegal, then I would say bravo to them. But it's totally illegal. The league has been fined 250,000 euros, and they've been ordered to take it down by June 30th. Take the app down by June 30th. The league tried to argue that, you know, because this feature was, they tried to argue that the feature was optional. Because I guess technically, like when you install an app, then you can decide that no, you don't want it to have access to your microphone. But we know a lot of people are not that vigilant about what they install, and you know, I mean, it's coming from what you would expect to be a trusted source. Like this is a known entity. This isn't like Joe Schmo's La Liga app. This is the official La Liga app. Like you would hope that they wouldn't try to sneak something like this in there. But they did. And then they snuck in the fact that you were agreeing to this, and rightfully, the data protection agency in Spain ruled that, no, this is not okay. So screw you guys, take down this app, and pay us 250,000 euros. Fine money.
I feel like they should have hit him with a bigger fine. Actually, that in euros might be different. I'm not going to do the math on that right now.
It's $283,000. So okay. Still not that much.
Yeah. So they should have hit
for a league that makes millions, and it's nothing.
Let's talk about a little bit of golf news that has nothing to do with golf at all.
It has more to do with the running of the bulls than it does golf, because in this case, it was the running of a stray golf cart that was like it had some boxes sitting on it, and then one of the boxes fell off and landed on the accelerator. So the golf cart just took off. This happened at the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach on the 16th hole. And basically this golf cart took off and it's, I don't want to say it chased after people, because that's not really how it works, but it was just this runaway golf cart, and five people were injured by this runaway golf cart, ranging from ages 25 to 82. You know, there was a broken arm, there was a spinal injury that resulted from this. These are really serious injuries. Like people, you know, ages ranging from 25 to 82. It seems like most of the people that were injured were actually people trying to stop the cart, we think of a golf cart as like kind of a small thing, right? Like can't be going that fast, can't be that heavy, can't have that much momentum, but these things are actually pretty big and pretty hefty, and they're designed to carry a lot of cargo. So if one of these things takes off with a pretty heavy payload, then you're definitely not, this isn't like, you know, your niece's Power Wheels, you know, chugging down the street. Like this is, you know, something that's going 25 miles an hour, you know, with a pretty heavy load on it. So yeah, you can't, like the people that were able to stop this, like were people that dove into the driver's seat and like yanked on the steering wheel to jerk the cart to the point where the box that was stuck on the accelerator fell off the accelerator. Like that's how they had to do this. They couldn't like that's how scary of a situation this was, that like that was the only way that they could stop this thing.
And yeah, I mean, it was definitely interesting, and like it was a freak accident of them loading stuff onto this thing, and one of the boxes, like you said, rolling over onto the accelerator. Like, so it was, and I mean, like, I don't know. It's just, it's such a weird situation to have happen. But
again,
yeah.
If it wasn't for the injuries, this would be hilarious. It might still be. Yeah. There's a video, so if you want
to
watch.
Yeah, but like you said, there, most of the people who were injured were people who were trying to jump on this thing and stop it. Whereas you probably would have been better off just getting out of its way until it hit a wall.
Yeah, but this thing was headed toward the crowd, so it's like.
Yeah.
How I do wonder, like, how far it would have gone had they not managed to do this. That's, you know, like, or whether it would have ended up on a course, and then like, what mm-hmm. What do you do as far as the actual golf goes when there's just a runaway golf cart on the course itself?
Oh, he's getting ready to take this backswing on this par three. Is that there's a cart coming through the course right now, and it's in the sand trap. All right, and I think, all right, you know, yeah, and there's a man heading over there, and he stopped
probably
it.
What would have happened. It probably would have landed it.
Guys, I can't believe once you haven't said that the cart went off course.
Well, it never got on course, so you can't say it's off course when it was never on course. Never had a course set. But yeah, unlike that cart, we do have a course, and our course has ended. Thank you for joining us this week. We will be back with more sports, more odds, more ends, much like this runaway golf cart. Hopefully something exciting will happen at the U.S. Open for us to be able to talk about. It's been pretty tame, except for the guy who got a hole in one at one of the par threes.
I think it ended. That's how, and we didn't know that's how not exciting it was. So, yeah, but if you want to correct us on that, you can find me on Twitter at JVZ. You can find Kaz at King Kaz. You can find DJM at Call Me DJM. Head on over to sportsoddsandends.com to find links to all the stories that we talked about today, including this video of this runaway golf cart. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.